Hi, I'm Trevor, and welcome to Catching Up on Cinema. If you aren't familiar with the program, Catching Up on Cinema is a film analysis podcast wherein we introduce each other to films, expand our cinematic horizons, and, in essence, catch up on our cinema. So, it is the month of March 2023, and is once again that very special time of the month wherein we do our very special Catching Up on Blu-ray episode. If you're not familiar with the show format, a Catching Up on Blu-ray episode is essentially where we take a look at the physical media release calendar, so that would be DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4K movies, and just say a little something about any titles that jump out at us for whatever reason in particular. You may have noticed there's only one voice on the mic today. It's just going to be you and I today, so hopefully this will be a breezy one, but hopefully it'll also be a fun one. If you would care to follow along with the home version of Catching Up on Blu-ray, you can do so by navigating to the lovely website of Blu-ray.com and just head on over to the movies / release dates page and navigate over to March of 2023. It is worth noting that the way Blu-ray.com generally organizes their release date calendar is they prioritize 4K releases at the forefront of each release week, so more than likely I'll be calling those out as we go, and I will also be making sure to call out the release dates as we go. And also, again, if you're not familiar with how this works, generally DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4Ks drop on Tuesdays of each calendar week. So again, I will be calling out the dates as we go, but it looks like we have something that I kind of wish my buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast was here to comment on, because this is an off-date release. It comes out March 1st, 2023. We have the, I believe, crowdfunded horror film, both on 4K and Blu-ray, Kill Her Goats. This has been a little bit of a running gag between Brad and myself. Brad was the one who introduced me to Kill Her Goats. This is brought to us by With an O Productions, by the way. And the big selling point here is that Kane Hodder is apparently involved in the production. And as far as I understand, this is a goat-themed slasher movie wherein the killer of the title, who's presumably killing females of the human species, in the form of the title being Kill Her Goats, I guess. I guess the killer is supposed to be like a goat man of some sort. I don't know if it's a person wearing a goat mask or if they're indeed a goat-human hybrid. Either way, it sounds completely ridiculous. And the amount of online traction that this thing has been getting has been astonishing, because somehow, just through a verbal conversation between myself and Brad, within days of him informing me about this thing's existence, I started finding it popping up on my Instagram feed. So I don't know what kind of ad dollars were spent to get this thing financed, but as far as I understand, it was a crowdfunding project and a successful one. I did not expect a 4K release of that, but you get it in both formats March 1st. Moving on, though, it looks like our first proper release date here is March 7th. So that would be, I believe, the first Tuesday of the month. Yes, that is correct. And we have a release of Air Force One on 4K, which I believe had been released previously. So this is just the Steelbook. That's the Wolfgang Peterson film, I believe, that of course features the "get off my plane" quote. It's a very fun late 90s thriller. Not one that I have like a specific appreciation for, but it is an easy watch for sure. It's a very cozy watch. Not one that I think I'll be picking up, but it's one of those things that if it pops up on TV and there's absolutely nothing else on, like if I'm staying at a hotel or something, I could totally see myself putting that on. It has that late 90s charm. Plus, plenty of Harrison Ford punching people, which is one of my very favorite things to see in cinema. In fact, back in the day, when I was kind of practicing, like finding excuses to practice my Photoshop skills and I was doing a daily blog. Actually made some Magic the Gathering cards, some digital ones, and I made two of them. I made Harrison Ford's punches and Indiana Jones's punches. And I believe the gimmick with those cards was that Indiana Jones's punches were a buff, whereas Harrison Ford's punches were a debuff. Because, my God, for a man who did so many goddamn movies wherein he punches people, and he's still doing them, mind you, Indiana Jones 5 will be coming out later this year. Good God, his punching form is just ghastly. It is the most baffling thing to behold. Like, truly, next time you watch a Harrison Ford action movie, pay special attention to whenever he has to hit people. It is a thing of beauty, and I say that very sarcastically. Beside that, though, we also have a 4K release of The Mask of Zorro, another late 90s action classic. This had already been released on 4K, I believe, so this is also a steelbook, but I've mentioned this plenty of times on the podcast before. I have a great deal of appreciation for this film. This is a Martin Campbell production. Martin Campbell before Green Lantern, so when he was real hot. Martin Campbell has given us some truly amazing action movies, this being among them. And also this movie introduced me to Catherine Zeta-Jones, which was a really, really, really big deal for an 11-year-old heterosexual boy. Moving on, we have our first Criterion release of Mildred Pierce in the form of Mildred Pierce. This is a 4K release. The film is from 1945 and is directed by Michael Curtiz. And it looks like it got very high marks in the technical categories on Blu-ray.com. So I'm sure that's a release that a lot of people are looking forward to, I'm sure. Looks like it's headlined by Joan Crawford. That is a name that I know, but not a name that I can say I've honestly seen many films from. Beside that, we also have a 4K release of something that I personally actually give a shit about. I'm sorry, Mildred Pierce. I'm sure you're a fantastic film that is certainly worthy of being placed in the Criterion Collection, but not exactly my personal cup of tea. We have here a steelbook release of Rocky II from 1979 on 4K. As far as I understand, all this month we're going to be getting 4K releases of Rocky 1 through 4 on 4K and in steelbook form. These are all individual releases coming out hot on the heels of the recent box set of Rocky 1 through 4, which I don't believe has steelbook cases, although I could be wrong on that. But yeah, we're getting individual releases of all of these, and again, I wish Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast was here to help me out with some of the deeper details of this. But as far as I understand, these discs, these Rocky 4Ks, are not doing well in terms of their technical scores. Not the best presentation, I guess, is what I've been reading. There's a variety of issues. Some of them are truly baffling. If you're interested, definitely peruse the Blu-ray.com forums. I'm sure you'll find what you're looking for. I am a huge fan of all things Rocky, so it's only a matter of time before I do end up upgrading my my Blu-ray box to whatever 4Ks are available. But just based on the low tech scores on these, it's very hard for me to justify doing that at the moment. So I'm going to hold out hope that someday we'll get a full box set of all the Rocky films, because I did mention there was a recent box set release that only includes Rocky 1 through 4, meaning it does not include Rocky 5 or Rocky Balboa, which is truly strange to me. And also, apparently, all those discs kind of bite. So I'm hoping they give this one another crack. But if things start to look like they're not going that direction, I'm thinking maybe at the very least I'll end up getting Rocky 4 just because currently that's the only way these new 4K discs, that is the only way to get the Rocky versus Drago director's cut, the recently released director's cut of Rocky 4 in physical form. So if that does end up being my only option, I will get it. But until then, I will wait. Beside that, we have our first Blu-ray release for the month of March. And this is Christmas, Bloody Christmas from 2022. And this is brought to us by director Joe Bagos. And Kyle and I actually reviewed this for Catching Up on Cinema not too long ago, in fact. And we actually reviewed this in December, excuse me. Neither he nor I cared much for this. There's some aspects of the presentation that are pretty neat, but something just didn't click for both of us. So I know this movie has very enthusiastic fans for sure, but sadly I can't count myself among them. So most certainly not anything I'm going to be spending money on. Below that, we have a release from Mill Creek Entertainment in their hideous VHS box simulation artwork motif, The Fan from 1996. I'm not positive if this actually has come out on Blu-ray previous to this, which is kind of shocking to me, because this was kind of a big deal movie. I mean, it's headlined by Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes. Oh yeah, and it also features a very young Benicio del Toro and, you know, John Leguizamo putting in good work, as well as Alan Barkin. Kind of a big deal. Plus, it's a Tony Scott film, and in recent years, actually, like very recently, within the past couple of years, I have noticed a huge swell in online appreciation for the work of Tony Scott. I don't know exactly what happened, but for whatever reason, the internet is very much celebrating the work of Tony Scott these days. Again, I'd be very curious actually to know what changed or what the impetus for that was, but it's something I've observed and it's been really interesting to see play out. But holy shit, 1.5 in terms of video quality. That is a yikes, to quote my buddy Brad's friend Bobby. I've seen this movie several times, actually. It's an odd one, for sure. It's very much a Tony Scott film in terms of its style and its presentation. Robert De Niro is completely despicable in it, and I will say this much. If you take issue with watching, children be verbally abused or put in compromising situations, this is not a film you will be able to stomach, because it gets pretty intense and parts of it are probably relatable to a lot of people that have, you know, dealt with troublesome parents, or troubled parents, I should say. I enjoy the film. It's a little melodramatic for sure. The Nine Inch Nails sequences are a little much from a style standpoint. I kind of get it, but it feels of its time for sure. It feels 1996, if that makes sense. But I don't know what it is about it exactly, but I kind of like The Fan. It's not a movie I think I need to own, especially with a 1.5 in terms of image quality, and especially in the VHS box art motif form. But for what it's worth, I've seen it a few times, and I kind of like it. We have The House That Screamed from Arrow from 1969, also from Mill Creek, and also bearing the VHS box art motif. We have Fear from director James Foley and starring a young Mark Wahlberg. This is from 1996 as well. Willie Pearson's in there, as is Alyssa Milano. This is a movie that my regular co-host on Catching Up on Cinema, Kyle, has mentioned to me a few times He told me there's some stuff in there that also, I think it's if you have problems with harm coming to animals, this is not a movie that you will be able to handle. I haven't seen it personally, but it's been mentioned to me a few times, and of course I'm aware of it. I lived through the 90s. Not in a hurry to see it, especially with a 2-star for the image quality. We have from Kino, Secret Admirer, from 1985. Hey, Fred Ward's in there. Unfortunately, I believe we lost him not too long ago. That's really unfortunate. Also, Kelly Preston's in there, and we also lost her not too long ago, a few years ago. Bummer. We have Women Talking from 2022 from Universal. This was a big deal at the Oscars kind of movie. My buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast, he actually gave me the rundown on this movie in the form of a micro review on his show, and it sounded very interesting. It sounded like a fantastic film. Just from a conceptual standpoint, I was kind of in. Not anything that I will blind buy, but I'm very, very curious. I'll just leave it at that. From 1990, and also from Mill Creek Entertainment, 3 stars out of 5 for image quality, and also with a VHS box art. We have John Ritter in Problem Child. Holy fucking shit. I don't know what the shelf life of the Problem Child project was, but there's a weird thing that comes with getting older that I've noticed, and I think it's because I'm entering into a certain stage of life where I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm starting to realize that, like, things that felt like they took a really long time, or things that felt like they hung around for a really long time when I was really young, were actually just 5 minutes. Like, in actual time, it was like 5 fucking minutes. Like, the best example that comes to mind is the hate plague, or the rage virus episodes of the Generation 1 Transformers cartoon. So the original version of the Transformers cartoon. I remembered that being a season-long saga. I remember that, like, occupying hours and hours of my imagination. I went back a couple years ago and rewatched that, and I think it was literally 2 episodes. Somehow I tricked my young brain tricked me into believing that those 2 episodes, like, spread out across, like, a whole year of my life or something. No, it was like 40 minutes. Like, if you take out all the commercials, all the other toy commercials, all the Dino Riders cartoon, like, commercials and bullshit, it was probably like 40 minutes of my life, but it felt like the whole world to me. And that's kind of how I feel about Problem Child, because if I jump into my memory from 1990, I remember there being, I think, 2 Problem Child movies and a whole ass cartoon for this stupid redhead being a dick to his very, very, very kind adoptive parents. I don't know how long the Problem Child experiment actually lasted in the grand scheme of pop culture, but to my young brain, it felt like it hung around. But yeah, Problem Child, I'd be really curious to try to watch that now, because I remember it being a big fucking deal, but I'm sure it completely sucks now. I mean, that kid was obnoxious back then. I'm sure he's intolerable these days. John Ritter's always great, though, so I'm sure watching him would be kind of fun. But anyway, we have Camille, starring Greta Garbo, from 1936. And we have The Running Man from 1987 from Paramount Pictures. This is a 35th anniversary edition of the film. I have no idea if it differs from any other previous Blu-ray releases of the film. So I'll just move on. We have Fill Her Up with Super from 1976. This is brought to us by Radiance Films, who are, as far as I can tell, a very young label, at least in my region in the U.S. They have several Japanese releases from the 60s and 70s. It looks like they largely specialize in retro foreign cinema. Oh, wow. They have a Franco Nero box set. I think I saw him. I think I spied a couple of frames of him in that the Pope's Exorcist movie that's coming out very, very soon, if not already. Always happy to see Franco Nero, especially when he's a ninja. So moving on, though. We have many retro releases that I would be misrepresenting myself if I pretended to actually give a shit. We have Making Mr. Right from 1987. That's a Kino disc. We have what I presume is the 50th Blu-ray release of Grease from 1978. We have The House That Screamed from Arrow. Snazzy cover art on that one, by the way. I like what they're doing with the reflection and the glass dagger. That's from 1969, by the way. What is this? Super Legend God Hikosa. SRS Cinema. I can't tell if this is anime or if it's a tokusatsu. If I had to guess, it's a toku film, just based on the previous releases from this label, SRS Cinema. They also put out Reigo and Raiga, as well as Olga, apparently. but more importantly, Howl from Beyond the Fog. That was a Daikaiju short film that I have yet to see, but I followed the Twitter account of that film, of that production, several years ago, and holy shit, the behind the scenes images that they were posting from it were very encouraging. A lot of love went into the making of that. I don't know if the movie's actually any good, but the suitmation and the miniature work looked very, very interesting. No idea what this is, though. Hikosa, but it's from 2022, though, so it's a contemporary release. I'll have to look into it. I'm sure it completely sucks. Moving on. Let's head on down to the next week. So that is March 14th, 2023. And we have here, wow, they actually changed up their order of priority, probably because the movie's such a big deal. We have The Whale coming out, I believe, only on Blu-ray for the time being. I would not be surprised if maybe they do a Criterion situation with this, where if you're not familiar, I believe Parasite was initially released on like home media formats by a different company, and then later Criterion put out their own version of it. This is from Lionsgate, and yeah, to me this seems like a good candidate for that sort of treatment. I believe Brendan Fraser did score himself a Best Actor win for this film. I believe Hong Chao was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but I do not believe she won. I actually didn't catch the Oscars this year, so excuse me if I'm not calling out my facts correctly. But yeah, this was Darren Aronofsky's most recent film. It was kind of quietly but also endlessly hyped for quite a while because of just the outpouring of love and support for Brendan Fraser that's been mounting over the past several years. The timing was just kind of brilliant for the release of this movie, because like that, everybody and their mother kind of came out of the woodwork to acknowledge, like, yeah, Brendan Fraser was and is kind of great. How better to honor that than to, you know, give him a role that he can really make something of and, you know, earn the highest honor that someone in his profession can in this region. I haven't seen this one. As far as I know, actually, reviews for it are divisive. Divisive because it is an adaptation of a play. From a filmmaking standpoint, I have heard it criticized of being too, quote, stagey. And also, apparently from a tone standpoint, some people didn't quite catch the vibe. But the one thing that seems to be universally agreed upon is, yes, Brendan Fraser and Hong Chao are both brilliant in it. I will end up watching this. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. I'm not going to blind buy the whale. I'll just put it that way. I don't need to run out to grab the whale. There's plenty of other things I can throw my money at in the meantime. Beside that, we have Walter Hill's Streets of Fire on 4K. This has been a movie that I've always been very, very curious about, because as far as I understand, it's like The Warriors, but it's like a musical at the same time. And I have heard rumors that a lot of like belt scroller or side scrolling beat 'em ups from the arcades of the day, so from the 80s and 90s, like your Final Fights and your Streets of Rages and your Double Dragons and whatnot, drew some form of inspiration from this movie. Like, it was somewhat popular internationally, I guess. Plus, Walter Hill has made a lot of good movies. I mean, not everyone's going to be a winner, but he has a lot of great shit on his resume. And I've kind of started to acknowledge that in more recent years, where I look over like a lot of the movies that I have on my shelf and a lot of the kinds of movies that I've been drawn to throughout my life. And I'm like, damn, this guy knows what's up or something. Looks like the 4K presentation of this is very solid. It's from Shout Factory. I don't know if I will blind buy this movie, but I've always been very, very curious about it, because it's been on my radar for forever. I just never found the right time to put it in the old Blu-ray machine and give it a whirl. Someday. Beside that, we have The Prince of Egypt from 1998. This is brought to us from Universal, and this is one of those animated movies that I think it has grown in reputation in more recent years. I don't remember it being the biggest deal, but then again, I grew up in a largely like secular community, so The Prince of Egypt wasn't exactly the most important movie or story, for that matter, for myself or my peers, but in certain communities I could see this getting a lot of play. And also on top of that, probably the most important thing is it's a pretty damn gorgeous movie, both in terms of audio and visual. It has a pretty incredible voice cast for the time, because you need to remember this was 1998. We were only a handful of years removed from your Lion Kings or your Aladdins, movies where stunt casting celebrities was becoming the style of the time, I guess, in your major animated features. That wasn't always the case. Like, you usually had your like stable of voice actors at your Disney or your Warner Brothers or what have you. But sometime in the 90s, I want to say, is when that happened. And it likely was largely as a result of the wild success of casting Robin Williams as the genie. But you look at the cast of this, it's like Val Kilmer, Ralph Fiennes, Michelle Pfeiffer, Sandra Bullock, Jeff Goldblum, and Danny Glover. And that's just the top billed people. Pretty big fucking deal. Prince of Egypt is a legit awesome animated film in a lot of ways. And it was also like, just from a technical standpoint, they put a lot of challenges in place for themselves. They really pushed themselves, and they delivered, as far as I recall. It's been a really long time since I've seen it. Not a special film to me personally, but very, very watchable, and certainly worthy of the 4K treatment. And I believe they handled it well. I'm actually going to look at the stats here in a second, but Blu-ray.com is actually having some issues at the moment. So I'm just going to move it right along to the title released beside it, another 4K release. This one, I don't know why this one's being put out. I don't know if this movie has fans, if I'm being perfectly honest. This is brought to us by Paramount. And is the 20th anniversary edition of The Core from 2003, starring Aaron Eckhart and Hilary Swank. Oh yeah, hey, Delroy Lindo's in there as well, as is the Tooch, Stanley Tucci, and wow. I don't remember liking this movie. I don't remember the effects in this movie being any sort of good in 2003. I don't know why you'd want to put that through a 4K process, because that's only going to make it look all the worse. And sure enough, it looks like even the video quality isn't worthwhile. 2.5 out of 5. That's Blu-ray.com doesn't hand those out like candy. Like, they're usually, like, they have an eye for detail that's unrivaled in this format, but normally they don't just toss out shitty numbers just to be mean. Like there's usually a reason for it. So the core sucked then and it sucks now. Moving on. We have one of my very favorite Rocky movies, Rocky 3 on 4K. I already said a lot about Rocky, so I'm going to move on. We have another Criterion release, a Chinese film by the English title of Last Hurrah for Chivalry. This is from 1979, and this is a wuxia film from John Woo. As far as I know, he doesn't have that many of those on his resume. I have never seen a wuxia film from John Woo. I'd be very curious to know what that's like, especially that early in his filmography, because if I'm being honest, I think the oldest films of his that I've seen, probably A Better Tomorrow, I think those are only from the mid-80s. I'd be curious to check this out. I'm not going to blind buy it, though. Sorry. Beside that, we have a title that I actually watched just last night, and I did blind buy this one, which tells you quite a lot about my personal taste in cinema. We have Dragon Ball Super: Superhero for 2022. This got a limited theatrical release in my region, in the U.S., and as far as I know, this was a somewhat early example of the medium doing quite well in limited theatrical screenings. I think, what the fuck is that show called? Demon something or other. I don't watch a modern anime, really. Whatever the fuck it was, demon something or other, demon sword, demon guy that fights demons on trains. It was a demon in a train, something like that. It made a lot of money at the box office, and because of that, from like a couple of years ago, guess what? Anime's here to stay. So we're going to be getting pretty much any of these major features are going to be getting at least a limited theatrical release in the U.S. till the end of time, because that demon train movie or whatever the fuck made a lot of money, and I believe this did too. This was pretty good. It makes me feel fucking old, though, because the animation quality gifted to these Dragon Ball movies as of late, pretty much are Dragon Ball Super Broly from a handful of years back. The animation quality in that was and may still be, like, if you're speaking from a strictly hand-drawn perspective, the best Dragon Ball has ever and probably ever will look. It was mind-blowing, and it made me feel old to watch it, because I look at the things that they did with the animation and with the tech in the presentation of that movie, of Broly, and I just look back on, and I look at the movies I have on my shelf, the Dragon Ball Z movies I have from the 90s, and I'm just like, holy shit, we've come a long way. Because the shot compositions and the movement and the color and just the sheer speed and ferocity of the animation is just so next level these days. And what's more, it's like, it's expected, like that's the norm now. And I look back on the very quaint Toei animation films I have from the 90s sitting on my shelf, and I'm just like, my god, like it's such a quantum leap in presentation style that it's like it's hard to go back. Well, I mean, it's not hard for me to go back, but I'm trying to imagine being like a kid and having Dragon Ball Super Broly be like the first Dragon Ball thing you ever see, and then you have Uncle Trevor put in the Tree of Might or some shit from Dragon Ball Z, and they're just like, what the fuck is this? like it looks like garbage. Why did somebody shit on the movie? Dragon Ball Super Superhero, the main thing I can say about it is as far as I understand, I could be wrong on this, most of, if not all of the movie is CGI animated. I want to say maybe the prologue portion when they're talking about all the Z stuff, maybe some of that was hand-drawn. It kind of looked it, but it may have just been heavily stylized. Either way, the presentation of it, I'm shocked, did not bother me. The CGI has gotten to a point where they can effectively emulate Akira Toriyama's hand-drawn style in computer animation. They done did it. It took a really long fucking time, but they got there. I believe it. I see it with my own eyes, and I believe it. It looks snazzy. I no complaints. Main thing with me is just the pace of the movie. It's 100 minutes long, which for a Dragon Ball movie, like I was talking to Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast just the other day about this. Most of the Dragon Ball Z movies that I remember and love to this day, most of them were very short. Like many of them are less than an hour long. Like a long one is like an hour 15 or an hour 20 or something. To have this be over an hour and a half long was more than a bit much. And another thing, and I know this is Dragon Ball Super, not Z. They are distinct things. I've never watched an episode of Super and likely never will. I'm sorry, my life is just too damn short to invest all the time in that. The other thing about the presentation that did bother me was the music. And that may be a personal thing, I really don't care much for the modern music they use for Super. I've watched and I own all the Super movies. I've never watched any of the show, but I do own the movies. I've watched them all. And there's something about the pacing of some of the scenes and the music in particular that is just, it feels very generic. Whereas if you look at Z, the music from that show is absolutely legendary. I forget the composer's name off the top of my head, but he is amazing. His audacious brass is truly special stuff that it I don't know, it resonates with me on a different level. But anyway, I've said more than enough. This movie was all right. Could have been better, I guess, but it's visually spectacular. I'll give it that much, which is not something I can say for most of the Dragon Ball shit that I was raised on. So we've come a long way. We also have A Man Called Otto from 2022. This is a remake of a Scandinavian film. I don't remember its country of origin, but I do know that it's a remake starring Tom Hanks. I haven't heard much good about it, but I haven't heard much about it at all. So I'll just leave it at that. We have Russell Mulcahy's Razorback. Razorback from 1984. I believe this was his feature film debut. I actually own the Australian Blu-ray of this, which does have Region A capability. So I don't have any need to purchase this. But this is brought to us by Shout Factory, and I believe it's the movie's official debut in our region. So if you're curious to check out Jaws by way of a killer boar in the outback, from the director of Highlander, maybe check it out. I thought it was all right. We have on 4K Phenomena, which is a Dario Argento film. Again, stuff that Brad would probably have quite a lot more to say about than myself. I believe this had come out on 4K previous to this. But this is from Synapse Films and features a very young Jennifer Connelly in the lead. Funny enough, I just watched Labyrinth, Jim Henson's Labyrinth, for the first time the other day. It was a gift from my buddy Kyle. So thanks for that, Kyle. You're definitely not listening to this, but thanks. Appreciate it. I enjoyed it. We have a Jet Li double feature, The Legend of Fong Sai-yuk, 1 and 2. I haven't seen either of those, but those are Wuja films from the early 90s, which was very much a huge staple of Jet Li's filmography at the time, especially. we have Glorious, which is a Shudder original from 2022, certified fresh. The Grand Tour from 1991, which features, 1991 Jeff Daniels and Ariana Richards, from director David Twohy. This is from Unearthed Films. Alternate title, Timescape, or Grand Tour : Disaster in Time. Interesting. I do have a special appreciation for Jeff Daniels, especially in the 90s. That's a maybe. I don't know that I would just blind buy that, but it's on my radar now, so I'll have to look into the Grand Tour. We have Alice Darling from Lionsgate Films. This is headlined by Anna Kendrick. I have no idea what that is, but the cover art is striking. I like the font choice and the color palette. We have Puppet Master : Doctor Death from Full Moon Features. They're still around, yes. In case you were wondering, they're still around. I may have to just skip on down to the next week because we've got quite a lot here, but none of it's really working for me. So yeah, I'm going to skip on down to the next week. And we have March 21st. So a big one that I have confirmed. My buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast has already purchased David Lynch, Inland Empire, 2006. It's a Criterion Blu-ray. And Brad is a huge David Lynch fan. He is a mark for David Lynch. So you better believe he bought this on the recent Criterion flash sale at Barnes & Noble. Not one that I've seen, but I've heard very, very good things, and I'm sure I will continue to hear very, very awesome things about David Lynch and his filmography over the course of further discussions with my buddy Brad. We have Dragon Slayer on 4K. I believe there's a Steelbook edition and Blu-ray. This is from 1981, and it's from Paramount Pictures, starring Peter McNichol. This is directed by Matthew Robbins, but I believe the true selling point of the movie is, it's not Peter McNichol, spoiler alert, the true selling point of this movie that I remember was, I think, Phil Tippett did the stop motion animation of the dragon, the titular dragon. From the Dragon Slayer title. I saw this a long time ago, and from a technical standpoint, for 1981 standards, there's some cool effects work in this movie. But I also remember it being very dreary and very dull as when I was pretty young. Actually, funny enough, mostly what I remember the movie for was like the one time I went to Universal Studios with my parents. They had like a Dragon Slayer stage show that, you know, I was a young boy. I heard the word dragon in the title. I didn't know there was a movie called Dragon Slayer that came out 6 years before I was born. But I remember it was like closed down or sold out or something. I remember being bummed about it. But yeah, I did end up seeing the movie at some point, and it has some neat effects. But beyond that, I don't think it's an especially good film. It's cool that it's being put out, though, especially considering all the goodwill that Phil Tippett has been receiving in recent years, probably spurred on by the release of his Mad God passion project. So it's kind of cool to see that train still rolling, like some of his work still being exhibited in the form of these older films from his body of work. We have Red Eye from 2005, getting a 4K release from Paramount Pictures. Wow, didn't see that coming. This is a Wes Craven film, and it's a good one. I'm going to fuck up his name. It's Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams, and Brian Cox is in there as well. I remember enjoying this quite a lot, especially the kind of like the isolation thriller or like bottle drama portion of it, like the earlier portions of it. It's a fun one. It's really lean too. I remember it. Yeah, 85 minutes. Damn, that's a movie ass movie right there. Yeah, that's a quality Wes Craven film. I would recommend that one if you're at all curious. Not one that I'm going to buy, but I can think of a couple people. More than likely, the Movies for Life folks have already bought this one. Maybe two copies, in fact. They're very excited about this. Beside that, we have Mithrigan, or Megan, from Universal Studios. This was the Killer Doll movie from 2022 that kind of blew up the internet for a few seconds in the form of the doll doing like TikTok dances or something. I could not give two shits. But James Wan is credited as co-writer on the film. I believe I wouldn't be surprised if he also helped produce this thing as well. I might end up watching this at some point, but I had zero hype for it ahead of its release. I haven't heard awful things about it. And one thing that's interesting to note here is that it is explicitly advertised on the box art with the phrase unrated edition. The reason I draw attention to that is I do remember hearing some complaints about a lack of violence or gore in the movie. So I'm curious if this unrated edition is strictly just an advertising trick. Like they're just trying to, you know, tease people with the prospect that, oh, maybe they got it right this time. Maybe they turned that PG-13 killer doll movie into an R-rated killer doll movie. Or if this is just like, you know, or like I don't know if it's true or not, basically. I don't know to what extent this unrated edition makes changes to the film. But I'd be curious to find out. Not going to buy it. We have Babylon in 4K and Blu-ray from 2022. Paramount Pictures. This was the movie that was nominated for all the Oscars and probably only won the technical ones, if memory serves. This is from director Damien Chazelle, who largely makes excellent films. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this one followed suit. I remember my buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast having quite a lot of good things to say about this one. And I am a sucker for movies about making movies or about the movie industry. So this is one that, even though I had zero hype for it at the time of its release, now that I have a better understanding of what it's all about, thanks to listening to my buddy Brad's podcast about it, I may have to check this one out ASAP. We have Rocky IV on 4K. As I said previously, if I was going to buy one of the questionable quality Rocky 4Ks at this moment, this would be the one, just because it's currently the only way to get the director's cut of Rocky IV. We have Dr. Giggles from 1992. This is from Shout Factory and stars Larry Drake as the titular Dr. Giggles. I've heard this one's fun. Fun little slasher movie of sorts. I've listened to a podcast about it. In no hurry to watch it or anything, but I like Larry Drake, and I don't mind a generic slasher movie, so could be fun. Moving on, we have The Long Wait in 4K from 1954. We have Critical Condition, starring Richard Pryor, and it looks like it's also a Shout Factory release. That's not one of his movies I've seen, actually. We have Final Exam in 4K from 1981. This is brought to us by Dark Force Entertainment, and this is directed by Jimmy Houston. Just based on the cover art with the silhouette of a man brandishing a knife and a blood splatter on the cover, I can assume, also being as it's from 1981, likely a generic slasher movie. Not one that I'm familiar with, though. Oh god, they're still making Left Behind movies. Rise of the Antichrist from 2023. Kevin Sorbo, what evil have you wrought? Oh no. I'm just looking at the menagerie of faces on the cover, and I'm trying to see who I recognize. Excuse me one second. I'm just trying to go by sight alone. see if I recognize any of these people. Oh no, I do recognize. That's Neil McDonough, and that is a Donald Pleasance looking Corbin Burnson. Seriously, Corbin Burnson turned into Donald Pleasance. Yikes! They got him. They got him. Oof, that doesn't sit well with me. Moving on though. I think that's about it for me personally. From that week. So let's move on to the last release date of the month of March 2023. And it looks like we do have an off-date release, a major one that I will point out here, in the form of Cauldron Films putting out City of the Living Dead on 4K. This is, of course, one of Lucio Fulci's classics. I believe that was part of a major trilogy of his. I don't think I've seen that one, but I've seen The Beyond, and I've seen Zombie 2. I'm trying to think of what the other ones are, but I think that's one of the major ones I haven't seen. But it looks like it's getting the 4K treatment. That's a big fucking deal for a lot of people. We have The Exorcist 3. We're now in March 28th, by the way, the last proper release date for the month. We have The Exorcist 3 Collector's Edition Plus Director's Cut on 4K. This is from 1990, and this is the William Peter Blatty directed Exorcist 3. I'm curious what the director's cut of this movie actually is, because I do know that this is a movie that saw quite a lot of rejiggering in post. I know the theatrical edition of the film, the entire finale, is completely like studio mandated stuff where it's like, we got to jazz this up. There needs to be, you are going to have an exorcism in your exorcism film, correct? I've heard this is a movie that has grown exponentially in recent years in terms of like its appraisal. Like a lot of people really, really like this movie now. Whereas at the time of its release, I want to say it was largely glossed over. But these days, this movie is well remembered and well regarded. We have, that was quick and also shocking. We have All Quiet on the Western Front, the German Oscar darling film that was up for every technical Oscar imaginable and also Best Picture, I think, this year. We have All Quiet on the Western Front from 2022 from director Edward Berger. And this is put out by MPI Media Group. But the reason I say this is both quick and shocking is that this is a Netflix film, and you can even see the Netflix branding on the cover. And it, folks, if you're not aware, Netflix movies don't always find their way to physical media. In fact, they seldom do. But I guess, you know, being as this was up for all manner of awards and whatnot, if you're going to put out any, this may as well be one of them. That quick turnaround time, and also surprising that it's a Netflix movie in a box, not something you see every day. Maybe start doing that to some of your other movies, because there's plenty of Netflix movies, including one that's really fucking bothering me right now, that I would very much like to see arrive in some sort of physical format. The one, just because I mentioned it, the one that is bothering me right now is I'm actually in the process of, and have been for, you know, forever, for like a couple of decades now, been collecting the entire filmography of the actor slash martial artist Scott Adkins. And it recently dawned on me, and this actually did keep me up one night, very recently, that one of his movies, only one that I'm aware of at the moment, Day Shift, is a Netflix movie. And currently, it only exists on Netflix. So for someone like myself, who's, you know, actively attempting to assemble a collection, a complete collection of all of the man's works in film, currently there's no option for that one. So years down the line, if they never put out a disc of that one, I guess I'll have to, I don't know, like bootleg a disc and make my own box or something, because that's what I'll have to stoop to if I'm going to actually have a complete collection. Physical media is important. Media preservation is important. Moving on, though. We have Freeway 2, Confessions of a Trick Baby, starring Natasha Lyonne. This is from Vinegar Syndrome, and it's from 1999. I've heard some amazing things about Freeway, which I believe they put out not too long ago. I have no idea what this is, Freeway 2, but I'm very curious to check out the first Freeway movie, because I've heard some really amazing things about it. Beside that, we have the movie I saw in theaters instead of WALL-E, which I only saw recently, within the past few months. Wanted, from 2008. I'll never forget. I was hanging out with my friends, and we're an indecisive bunch. Only one of us had the gumption to put his foot down and say, "We're watching this movie." The decision came down to Wanted or WALL-E, and he said, "Fuck it, we're watching Wanted." And to date, it's like maybe top three worst movies I've ever seen in the theater. Number one is The Spirit, by the way, just in case you're curious. But yeah, this movie's not very good. Young James McAvoy in it, though. That was, like, I had no idea who he was at the time. He didn't make an impression in that movie, but in recent years, I've come to really love that man's work. I think he's a great actor. He didn't do shit in that movie for me. Like, the one thing that I can... There's two things that I can honestly say I thoroughly enjoyed in that movie. One, the Danny Elfman score, where he's doing some rock and roll kind of shit in that, and he's like tapping into his Oingo Boingo roots. He actually made a song. He did the vocals for a whole ass song in that movie, which I kind of enjoy. I think it's called the Little Things. Two, Morgan Freeman says the phrase, "Shoot this motherfucker." It's like, yes. In 2008, when he was, you know, hanging out with Christopher Nolan and doing Batman movies and stuff, you know, when he was so often stereotypically cast as, you know, the wise, sage-like old man, to hear him in a, you know, freshly tailored suit point at James McAvoy and say, "Shoot this motherfucker." I was like, yes, that is a fun use of your Morgan Freeman. That's a very novel use of your Morgan Freeman at the time. It's hard to believe. He kind of got his start in Street Smarts, I think, where he played a scary pimp. He's come a long way. We have beside that Dead Silence on 4K from 2007. It's a scary puppet movie. I remember some of my friends giggling about it in 2007. I've never seen it myself. Likely never will. But apparently it gets a 4K. Cool. We have The 5 Days on 4K from Severin Films. This is also a Dario Argento film. I wouldn't have guessed it based on the cover art. Not one that I'm familiar with, but that's cool. It's really cool, actually, to see more Argento films, especially somewhat obscure ones, get put out. We have Primal Rage from Vinegar Syndrome getting the 4K treatment. This is from 1988. And this is from director Vittorio Rambaldi. It's got a fucking baboon on the cover. It's got a baboon. That could be fun. Plus, it's called Primal Rage, which, as a child who lived through the 90s, to me, there's a lot of fun associations with that phrase. Because all I think of is the arcade game where you take your giant monkey man and you fight your giant T-Rex man, and then you team up to fight the spiky Triceratops man. If you've never seen Primal Rage, the arcade game, look it up, kids. You'll have a lot of fun watching those claymation dinosaurs beat the fuck out of each other and bleed a lot. We have Mexican Gothic, : the films of Carlos Enrique Taboada from Vinegar Syndrome, 1975 to 1984. Cool cover art. Dig the cat. I have no idea who Carlos Enrique Taboada is, but apparently Vinegar Syndrome loves him. We have Breathless from Fun City Editions. Richard Gere in Breathless from 1983. Funny enough, Brad from CinemaSpeak, he actually has me embarking on a project for the next time I chat with him. I am tasked with watching my first Fun CD Editions film. I've never watched a movie from their label. I believe the movie's name is Pirates. And I believe, I don't know if he's still doing it, but a friend of the show, Brian, from the Movies for Life podcast, I believe... when I spoke with him a while back, he was actually in the process of collecting all the Fun City Editions movies, and he was enjoying it. I have no idea what this is, but Richard Gere, I kind of like him. He's a pretty good actor. Like, I enjoy Richard Gere performances. I know he doesn't work for everybody, but I like him. Primal Fear, man, that's a good-ass movie. And not a great performance from him, but I do enjoy The Jackal. His Irish accent needed some polishing, or maybe he probably just shouldn't have done it. But I still enjoyed him, even though the accent's kind of funny. We have Cinderella from Disney / Buena Vista from 1950. This is getting the 4K treatment from Disney, which is cool. I mean... not anything that I need to own. I've certainly seen it my fair share of times, but the reason I single it out is just the fact that Disney doesn't do physical media all the time. So it's kind of cool that they're, you know, giving that one some love. We have Kuruku, Beast of the Amazon, 1956. This is a Vinegar Syndrome release. I'm sure they'll do a lovely job with it. We have a title that I think... maybe from a Vinegar Syndrome partner label. Brad is the guy who keeps track of all this stuff. I have no fucking clue, but I'm going to assume, just based on the cover art and its placement on the release date calendar, that's from a partner label. I actually bought this, but haven't received it yet. It's currently in the mail. Hitman Heart, Wrestling with Shadows. This is a Blu-ray of a documentary from 1998, and this is about not only Bret Hart but the wrestling industry, and mostly the focus is on himself and the what they call the Hart Dynasty. I'm a huge pro wrestling fan. I was raised on the Attitude Era for sure. I saw this ages ago in like 240p. As soon as I saw this pop up on the release calendar, I was super anxious to grab it. And I love Bret Hart, in particular. Bret, to me, it's Sean and Bret, like forever in terms of like favorite wrestlers, favorite in-ring performers, specifically Sean and Bret all day. They're the Ken and Ryu of wrestling, where Shawn Michaels is Ken. He's the kind of loosey-goosey wild man, the, you know, improv artist. And Bret is the, you know, the stiffer, like, not necessarily in terms of, like, hurting people in wrestling parlance, but, like, you know, more uptight style of performer. More rigid, I guess. He's the Ryu. I like that. I've never made that analogy before, but the Ken and Ryu of wrestling, those are my guys. I'm super excited to rewatch this. I think it'll be illuminating and just a lot of fun for me personally to take a walk down memory lane from for 90s wrestling, something that I grew up on. The Lighthouse, holy shit, is getting a 4K release. I don't recall if it did previous to this. I don't think it did. I think... this is being brought to us by A24, and this is in Digibook format, and I believe this is the same treatment that they gave to Midsommar. It's like a special 4K edition of the movie that I think you can only purchase through the A24 web store. I'll have to let my buddy Kyle know about that. I don't know if he has 4K capability, but He loves Robert Eggers, and he loves Ari Aster, and I'm sure he'd love to know that this exists. We have from Arrow, Black Sunday, a.k.a. that movie about the blimp. I remember my dad talking about this movie a lot. By the way, my dad's still alive. I know I used the phrase, I remember my dad, a lot, but in case anybody gives a shit, or if anybody actually listens to this, Mr. Trevor is still alive. He's still very much alive and kicking. I do remember when I was young, him talking about this, and I always remembered it as that movie with the blimp. It's the football game with the blimp, and there's like some terrorism or some shit. John Frankenheimer, I wonder how drunk he was, because, dear listener, if you're not aware, how drunk John Frankenheimer was on the set is a clear indication as to the quality of the film, because the man had problems. And the man was also, he also had a temper, apparently. He knew how to throw his weight around. If you've ever watched the documentary about the making of the Island of Dr. Moreau movie, you probably have an idea of what I'm referring to. But he had a reputation, I guess is what I'm getting at. He knew how to construct a thriller, though. But holy shit, quite the cast. Robert Shaw and Bruce Dern. I really like both of them, especially Robert Shaw. I watched a lot of Jaws when I was young. What was it? Like, was he in Force 10 from Navarone? Not the one everybody remembers, not Guns of Navarone. I think it was like Force 10 from Navarone or something. Moving on, though, we have Party Girl from Fun City Editions also from 1995. I don't know what to say about it, but Parker Posey's in it, so that'll move some units. I know she has a lot of fans, a lot of really enthusiastic fans for that matter. We have the movie with the title that blew up the internet for a few seconds there, just because of its sheer bluntness and just how clunky it is. Plane from Lionsgate Films from 2023. Looks like Jean-Francois Richer directed this. I have no idea who that is, but this is the Gerard Butler headlined film, also featuring Luke Cage himself, Mike Coulter, the man who mostly does Christian films these days, as far as I know. I skipped this. I am a sucker for Gerard Butler trash, for sure. This movie certainly looked it, but I was kind of shocked. I actually caught through Twitter, somebody made a clip of a protracted action sequence in the film, and they posted it, and it was just like basically a wrestling scrap between Mr. Butler and some goon, and I was impressed with the presentation of just that scene. I don't know if that speaks to the overall quality of the film, but on the strength of that one sequence, it is officially on my radar now. It's not a joke. I actually kind of am interested to check this one out. Beside that, we have a big old box from Severin Films called Violent Streets, the Umberto Lenzi and Tomas Milian collection. This ranges from 1974 to 1978, and there are five movies in this box, including Almost Human, Syndicate Sadists, Free Hand for a Tough Cop, The Cynic, The Rat, and The Fist, Brothers Till We Die. It looks like there's also a music CD in there as well. Wow. I don't know who any of these people are, but I know they're Italian, and it looks like there's a lot of civil unrest, a lot of hippies, and a lot of guns. Yikes. Moving on, though. It looks like a very handsome box. I'll give them that much. To date, I don't think I actually own any Severin films. We have everybody's favorite label, AGFA. That is the American Genre Film Archive. Putting out Shaolin Invincibles plus 7-1 from 1973 to 1977. So I assume this is two different movies. I don't know what this is, but Brad has made me a believer in AGFA. They sound like they have a particular vibe, And some of the projects that they gobble up and preserve sound like a lot of fun, if I'm being honest. Like, they don't sound like good movies, but they do sound like fun, like, regional films that probably would never have a prayer of achieving distribution if not for the efforts of people like AGFA. And speaking of AGFA, they are also putting out GLOW: The Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. This appears to be a documentary from 2012 that's about a women's wrestling league that I actually do know by reputation, although I've never watched any of the programming. That's cool. I think that's cool. We have Dog Tags from Vinegar Syndrome. This is from 1987. Kind of love that cover art. It looks like it's a POW movie. So it's a Vietnam War movie of sorts. Not one that I'm familiar with, though. I'll have to look into that. We have The Son of the Stars from Deaf Crocodile Films. We have Calvare, or Vaire, from Yellow Veil Pictures from 2004. Wow. Whoever did the cover art for that one, good job. Quite striking. It's almost like a crown of thorns, but it's a bunch of angry faces in like with a crimson kind of color palette there. Moving on, though, we have Nightmares from 1980. We have Rawhead Rex is getting a 4K release from fucking Kino, of all people. Okay. I believe the Blu-ray for this came out a while back. I have to assume, and this is just me, like, putting on my tinfoil hat, I have to assume this 4K is being spurred on by probably the success of the Red Letter Media promotion for the movie. They did a whole-ass episode, kind of, not a whole episode, but they talked at length about the movie, so I imagine it popped up on a lot of people's radars that wouldn't have registered with prior to that. So yeah, Rawhead Rex is getting a 4K. Interesting. We have Batman: The Doom That Came to Gotham from 2023. This is a DC Warner Brothers animated film. I remember watching a video about the comic from which this is based, and comic looked fun, although it didn't seem to end all that well. Like, it seemed like it kind of fell apart in the last act, but the build-up was pretty fucking cool. It's Batman versus Lovecraft. Like, it's what if Batman in the world of H.P. Lovecraft. Very cool concept, and they do a lot of cool things with it in the comic. Not sure how the movie goes. We have Attack Force Z from Severin Films from 1981. And this, holy shit, we got Mel Gibson, Sam Neill, and we have a John Waters. I don't know if it's the John Waters. I assume that is not the John Waters. I'll just read the plot description. The elite volunteers of Attack Force Z are assigned the difficult and dangerous task of locating and recovering a defecting Japanese government official. Set in the Sambalang Straits in the South Pacific during World War II. Okay. Not a movie that I'm familiar with, but based on the cast, could be a really fun watch. Although fun is probably not the right word to use when we're talking about the Pacific Theater of World War II. Moving on, we have Blood on Méliès's Moon from 2016. This is from Severin Films, and there are three movies in here. The Little Wizards of Oz and Fantasticozzi. Interesting. Looks to be a series of Italian productions, and we are like very much referencing a trip to the moon in the form of the moon face with the giant like rocket slug embedded in its eyeball. Not sure what that is, but the cover art is definitely eye-catching. Interesting reference. We have Eat, Brains, Love from 2019 from Gunpowder and Sky. It looks to be a zombie love story of sorts. Anybody I recognize here in the... No, I don't recognize anybody in the cast, so I'm just going to move on. But Gunpowder and Sky is one of those labels that I also have never watched anything from. We have Golden Era, a movie about the game that defined a generation from ETR Media. No joke, I'm pretty sure this is a documentary about the GoldenEye, the Rare is the name of the video game company, the Rare produced or developed GoldenEye video game for the Nintendo 64. Recently got re-released. Wow. Didn't know it was deserving of a documentary, and I don't know if it changed the world, but a lot of people played it for sure. We have Assassin of the Tsar from Def Crocodile Films from 1991. We have Missing from 2023, Certified Fresh. This is one of those, Brad taught me the name of this subgenre, screen life movies. I've heard very good things about this, along with many other screen life movies. I've yet to actually take the plunge and watch one of those before, but Brad from Cinema Speak, he's a big fan of the genre. And I've heard mostly good things about that movie. We have Babe, part of the Peekarama collection from Vinegar Syndrome from 1981. We have Knockabout from 1979. This is a Yuen Biao headlined martial arts film directed by his buddy Sammo Hung. So you know it's fucking great. This is one that I've only seen clips of. I've never watched the whole thing. But anytime you have the two of them involved in anything, it is worth your fucking time. Yuen Biao is a fantastic acrobat in particular, and I've heard he does some spectacular stunts in this movie. Very much one that I would like to watch front to back. We have from Criterion, Chilly Scenes of Winter from 1979. This is brought to us by Joan Micklin Silver, and stars John Heard, Mary Beth Hurt, Peter... Yeah, I'm done. Sorry, I'm pretending to care, but we do have an expression here that we use on Catching Up on Cinema. If it's part of the Criterion Collection, it is more than likely worth your time, even if you don't know what it is. In my case, that's most of what they put out. But moving on, we have Wild Reeds from Altered Innocence from 1994. Looks erotic. I don't know what it is, but it looks like there's some fucking in it. Speaking of fucking, we have Thrust from 2022, from Culture Shock Releasing. The End of Men is the tagline listed on the cover, and there is a woman, I will point out, there is a woman carrying some sort of gold-encrusted belt. Is this a secret wrestling movie? Because if it is, I might be interested. Yeah, I have no idea what that is, but it's called Thrust. It's from 2022. We have The Seven from Texas from Dorado Films from 1964. I'm looking at their catalog here because I'm not really familiar with this label. It looks like they specialize in Italian cinema from a bygone age, from the 60s and 70s, largely, from what I can tell. The reason I zeroed in on that one for just a second is I very recently watched all of the Magnificent Seven movies, so The Seven from Texas, Seven, Cowboys, People with Guns, made me think of that. Only two of those Magnificent Seven movies are any good, by the way. There's four of them, in case you're curious. We have How to Build a Time Machine from Circle Collective from 2016. And this is brought to us by director Jay Cheel and writer Jay Cheel, who I believe, and this is me just yanking words out of the ether that don't belong to me. I think he's from the Film Junk podcast that I know my buddy Brad is a fan of. So I'm sure he is very hyped about the release of this. In fact, I'm pretty sure he already owns this. Big fan of Jay Cheel. Not me. I don't know shit about Jay Cheel, but Brad, he's the Jay Cheel fan. Okay, so I'm running out of gas, and these goddamn Vinegar Syndrome partner label things just keep fucking coming. They always They always backfill the end of the month with this shit. It's driving me nuts. So I'm just going to speed through the remainder of all this because I would like to go eat dinner now. So we have Deep Undead, 2005. The Flesh Merchant, 1993. Meet Me in the Bathroom, 2022. Tomahawk, 1951. Guilty Pleasures, 1997. Beautiful Beings, 2022. Hypochondriac, 2022. American Rap Star, 2020. Another, from 2012. The Sun, from 2022. Wait a second, I need to pause on this one. This is from director Florian Zeller, and has Hugh Jackman, Vanessa Kirby, Laura Dern, Anthony Hopkins. I think this is a real-ass movie. I don't know who Florian Zeller is, but the rest of these people are really heavy hitters in the acting world. And I know Hugh Jackman will not rest until he has Oscar gold. Because every couple of years, he's got to do something big and dramatic. Obviously this wasn't the one, but he's never going to stop trying. The Academy better do something about that, because I swear he's going to hurt himself. Like, if you keep pushing Hugh, he's going to hurt himself or others, or something bad is going to happen, because this man will not fucking stop. He's a goddamn Terminator, and he will not stop until that Oscar is dead or in his hands. What else we got? I think we made it to the end, folks. I think I managed to survive. So, as is customary, I'll proceed backwards through the calendar now, and just highlight any titles that I think I will actually buy or check out for whatever reason. So I'm gonna proceed on through here. I'm not gonna buy All Quiet on the Western Front, but I'll watch it. I've heard very mixed things about it. It's a movie that seems to be heavily analyzed in this moment. There's a lot of different perspectives on it. But I am a sucker for war movies. I know they're attempting to advertise it as the anti-war movie. But I have heard arguments saying that, you know, you can't really do that. like you can't really make a movie about war and make it an anti-war movie, at least not a traditional war movie anyway. I'll watch it, but I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to pay nothing for it until I've determined that it's worth putting on my shelf, which is getting increasingly crowded these days. Hitman Heart, Wrestling with Shadows. Already paid for it, already in the mail. I bought it. What else we got? Sorry, Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist. Not for me. Rocky IV, Steelbook 4K. Kind of considering it, but I also feel like that's being premature on my part. Like, I want it, I really do, because I am a sucker for all things Rocky, and it would be nice to own the director's cut of Rocky IV, which I did see in the theater, so I have seen it. It's not like it's all going to be new to me. But I haven't heard good things about these discs, and it's like, maybe if I hold out, they'll give it another crack or something, or maybe they'll put out like the whole damn box with Rocky through Rocky Balboa, and then I can just get it all in one fell swoop, being as I pretty much know I'm going to anyway. Megan, if it's available for free, like if I have a plane ride or something, I might watch that. Babylon, not going to pay for that, but Brad convinced me I should watch that. I think I would really like it. I already got Dragon Ball Super, Superhero, and already watched it just last night. It was all right. Razorback, like I said, I already have my copy, but it's not this copy. I think it's from Umbrella Entertainment, if you're at all curious. Their titles don't show up on the Blu-ray.com calendar because they are an Australian disc publisher, but quite a lot of them are Region A, and they have quite a lot of cool stuff, so maybe check them out. The Whale, not going to buy it, would like to watch it. Streets of Fire, that's a maybe. Maybe if it's the right price. Big maybe, though. Mask of Zorro and Air Force One 4K Steelbooks. I already own Mask of Zorro on Blu-ray, and I'm fine with that. And Air Force One, it's not a movie I think I need to own. Always a movie I enjoy watching, not one I need to own. Same goes for The Fan, I guess. I've watched it plenty of times. I don't think I need that on my shelf. So on the whole, that was actually it, folks. On the whole, very light month for me personally, I guess, in terms of things I'm going to be buying. I think I pretty much already got all the things I'm going to get. Not the biggest month for me personally, but there's quite a lot of prestige cinema that dropped this month. Stuff that I've likely glossed over that you, the listener, if there are any listeners, are probably chomping at the bit to get, and are probably like, why do you talk about that? Why do you talk about Never Say Die from 1939, or Thanks for the Memory from 1938, a Bob Hope movie? That's like the best movie ever. It's because I'm not into that, man. Like, it's my show. Get your own. that's about it for this edition of Catching Up on Blu-ray. So, if you'd like to catch up on any of our other Catching Up on Cinema content, you can do so by navigating to our website at catchinguponcinema.com. You can also find us on the social medias in the form of the Instagram at catchinguponcinema, as well as the Twitter at catchingcinema. So feel free to hit me up at either of those. And the podcast is available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade. So fucking Google it. That being said, thanks so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.